You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Welcome to Psyched by MG. This is Mary Grace Randazzo-Ratliff, or MG for short. I've been a psychotherapist in private practice for 32 years now. Guess what, everyone? We all have issues. So it's time to lighten up and move forward. Let's stop letting our crap control us and take control of our crap.
Hello. Hi, good evening to everyone. Well, before anyone who's listening does anything, we need your support. We need you to click like, subscribe, to send us a message at Psyched by MG here on Facebook. Wherever you are, just please stop. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podcast Detroit, our home, and YouTube, Psyched by MG, of course, on Facebook and LinkedIn, and all these different locations that you can find us. And we really do need you to take a moment right now and hit subscribe, hit like, tell us what you're thinking. If you have a show idea, if there's, you know, some kind of stressor or crap that's really bugging you, we want to hear about it so that we can do shows that will support you and help you through stuff. That being said, hello, Matthew.
Hello. Hello, everyone. Hi to all the listeners. And I want to stress, too, what you were saying. I think it's really nice that you always start off with that and letting people know so that it, you know, they feel like they're involved and we've, you know, they're, it's part of kind of collecting one collective voice, right? And so I like that you do that. And I think it's really helpful. So.
And we really need you to do it. We like that connected thing. So Matthew, Burita, and I are, of course, tonight we're going to talk about tough love. But you know what? We're going to talk about tough love. And I found this quote that I really liked. The secret of change is to focus all of your energy, not on fighting the old, but on building the new. That's Socrates. Mm-hmm. Thinking about, you know, tough love. Oh, we're going to talk about tough love. And, you know, Matthew and I had a little conversation about this because I don't know what's happening. Tough love is love. And let me give you the exact definition of tough love. And it's promotion of a person's welfare. Promotion of a person's welfare, especially that of an addict, a child, a vulnerable person, by enforcing certain constraints on them or requiring them to take responsibility for their actions. So promotion of a person's welfare, especially that of an addict, child, I added vulnerable person, by enforcing certain constraints on them or requiring them to take responsibility for their actions. And this is a part of being a parent, a therapist, a teacher, a mentor, a role model, a person in someone's life who cares. I feel like, you know, tough love is getting lost a little bit and not understood of how important it is to, when you really love and care somebody, to do tough love. And when you're going to do a tough love with somebody, the true intention, I think, and Matthew, I think you're going to relate to this, the core of that intention is you're trying to protect the person you love. You're trying to guide them in a way. It is about them, first of all. It's not about you. It is not about you winning an argument. It is not about you proving a point. If you're going to do tough love, understand authentically the true intention behind it isn't about you, it's about them. Because you're worried that they're going to get hurt, that something's going to happen to them, because they make certain decisions that are high risk, that are harmful, that are ignorant. And so when you think about tough love and you think about effective ways of doing tough love, I think the first step that you have to realize is I wouldn't come up from a place of having a bad day or rage, because the person needing to receive the love is just going to argue with you and not receive it from a place of true good intentions. Matthew, you and I, we often talk, and I have this thing where, and we both say this, where I have to do a tough love situation with somebody, whether it's a client, a kid, whoever, friend. And I will say, I hope you can hear two things. I hope you can hear I'm coming from a place where I'm worried about you and not trying to control you.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm scared for your well-being, that this is compassion, not domination and control. And I think that's an important message when you're talking to somebody that you want to set a limit with and you need to do a tough love situation. And you and I know, we find most people, especially if they've been dominated in the past, abused in the past, when you need to set a limit with them and say, "Hi, I really got to have you think about what you're doing here, your choices. You're going down an old pathway that keeps leading you to a bad outcome. But I hope you can hear me saying this to you from a place of concern." And then the second part is to understand authentically for the person who's doing the tough love, being right does not feel good. Being right in a situation in which someone didn't listen or they keep making the mistake means that that person you love is getting hurt. It cannot come from a place of arrogance, of being a know-it-all, of aggression. I think those keys are so important to absorb when you need to practice tough love. Don't come from aggression. Don't come from a place of being a know-it-all. Don't come from a place of I'm right and you need to get that I'm right. Because this person who's struggling is really struggling and they're making bad decisions. You know, I think I've shared, you know, I've been doing this a long time, and Matthew and I have both been in addictions, and you really have to use it in, being an addiction therapist, because I've said for years, addiction is a disease of rationalization. So you rationalize to yourself bad behavior that keeps you sick and stuck and perpetuating the same problems over and over in your life until the point where you can kill yourself. And so tough love, that real, you know, poke in between the eyes emotionally, where you say to someone, and we get this often where an addict will come in and we'll say, you know, did you use? And they'll say, well, you know, I did better this week. Yeah, but did you use? Yes or no? Yep, I did. And, you know, say it's a cocaine addict, and did you go into the city? You know, cocaine addicts are addicted to risky behavior as well as the cocaine. And you know, so many times I've been with that person and I'm watching that risky behavior and I'm dying because I know that they only have so many lives. And in a few cases, I have said, I don't want to see you anymore. I don't want to see you anymore. I don't want to see you anymore because you're going to die. And I care about you, and watching you make the decisions that you make and watching you getting ready to die is very painful for me. It's hard. So don't come back. And I've had a few addicts go, what are you talking about? You kicking me out? And I'm like, oh yeah. I keep handing you tools every week and you flip me the bird and drop them on the floor and keep using and keep doing your crap. But when somebody cares about you and has pain when you hurt, there's a point where I say, look, I can't take your money because you're not using the tools. And two, I can't watch you do this anymore. So I don't want you coming back. And there was the case years ago where I freaked the person out so much that they went to a rehab center. And the therapist at the rehab center said, I don't know what you said to this person, but you scared the hell out of them. I said, good. Now, my point isn't to hurt them. My point is they are so bad, they can die. I care enough about the person to tell them the truth so that they don't hurt anymore. And the therapist said, well, will you talk to them? And I said, no. I said, no, I don't want them. I told them that they can't be here unless they do a 6-month residential program. I said, I'll talk to them when they're about ready for discharge. And then once they succeed and gain strength, then I'll consider it. Tough love. That is not fun to do, but necessary and essential. Absolutely freaking essential. It isn't all about praise and, you know, saying all the things that people like to hear. When you're really connected and care about somebody, you got to say the things that are tough. And I think it's getting lost in society a little bit right now. We're seeing a lot of bad behavior without tough love, without limits. And you heard a lot of people screaming about that with this insurrection that happened. Where are the limits? Bad behavior. If you care enough, you're gonna say no. That's not all right. You're gonna get hurt.
Yeah, I think when you think about it too, and especially in, the practice of what we do, and I always stress that for people who are listening as well. The practice, not perfection. And so, like you were saying too, and piggybacking off of that, you know, providing these resources to individuals, but the work has to be put in, right? So it's, you know, when you think about, you know, an analogy of like going to the chiropractor, you're not going to go to the chiropractor once every 6 months or once a year to get an alignment, right? Or to get any correction. You're going to go more than that. And this is the same thing with, you know, investing in therapy or some type of modality that is therapeutic to get that ball rolling. Obviously, we know certain symptoms and certain, you know, diagnoses require more extreme measures. But we're also, when we're talking about tough love, really, I would like people to know and hear that it's preventative. We're talking about prevention care. And so, you know, we know so much about, you know, just in terms of our experience, a lot of it, if not most of it, relates to prevention. And so when we're talking about the best, and I've said this before, the best intervention is the earliest intervention. And so the earliest intervention sometimes is that tough love, is setting that tough limit. Now, that doesn't mean that it's not going to be tough or tougher, you know, beyond that point, beyond that limit, beyond that boundary. But when you set that limit and you're learning to, you know, have that, you know, preventative care, then you're allowing, you know, you're allowing the person to understand that they don't have to be bound up. They can liberate themselves. And it sets them on a path to, you know, I mean, in, we say enlightenment or these, you know, gaining insight or, you know, the kind of breakthroughs that, you know, we all have. And I think that I agree with you. I think, you know, especially with the insurrection and just even, you know, kind of recovering, we're all recovering. That's also something too, is that setting these limits, when you are able to suspend your own ego and, like you were saying, get out of your own way, it's not about us, you're not going to take offense to or even use the adjective or description of, well, that you're being too harsh. It's not going to be about being harsh at all. It's going to be about being preventative and corrective, so that, and then being able to receive it as, holy, I mean, excuse my language, holy shit, you know, you care about me. Yeah. You saying that means that you care. I am in a place where I'm able to receive your care and your concern, and I'm not going to retaliate. And, you know, as we know, sometimes, patients might retaliate against the therapist. They might retaliate against the institution. They might then retaliate against themselves, but there's consequences. And I think that's also something, you know, it'd be to not fall on deaf ear when we talk about tough love, is that it prevents, it's a prevention care method and modality to resist going in the direction of harsher consequences. So as you were saying with the, you know, some of the clients and, you know, setting these limits and saying no with people and having these healthy boundaries, being able to implement that so that, again, down the road, you can commiserate and talk about how you avoided a negative consequence, avoided something disastrous.
Yeah.
As we so often know, and we, you know, and I always, and I do, I, you know, I share, you know, it not often, but when I hear something and I'll say, yeah, you know, when disease of rationalization, right? So specifically with substance use and abuse, and I'll say, I'm going to be transparent with you here. It's going to get worse. Mm-hmm. And I've seen it get worse. And let me explain to you and share some examples of how it gets worse. Mm-hmm. Because when you're not standing behind barbed wire, right? When you're not standing in your own 6x9 cell, you mm-hmm. think there are no limits. You think that you can keep going. And nobody, there hasn't been anyone who provides that intervention and that, you know, that that kind of really what might appear harsh at the time, but it's just a life-saving technique and a life-saving method. And so often, I think, you know, and I think you would agree, it's like so many people focus on like, oh, that's being harsh, or, you know, why would you say that? And it's like, wait a minute, these can actually, like, this has saved your life.
Yes, yes. You know, you made me think of, I had two thoughts as I was listening to you, Matthew. And one, you know, to speak to parents specifically, and maybe it could be anybody, but I was thinking about parents when I was listening to you. So often when parents are watching their kids do risky behavior, you know, something that, you know, they don't want the kid to be in trouble. They want their child to be okay. Mm-hmm. I just went through it a few minutes ago with my daughter. She's, you know, going to see a friend in Ann Arbor. She's been so isolated and cleared all the COVID stuff. But anyway, and she said, yeah, and then I'm going to park in the parking garage in Ann Arbor. And my first thought was, oh my God, you're going to leave at like 11 or 12 at night and you're going to walk your butt to the parking garage. And I said, that makes me nervous. And she said, got it. I've already talked to my friend about, would she be willing to walk me to the parking garage? So I'm not walking by myself. Then I'm going to drive her to her apartment. And I started to chuckle. I thought, wow, good, proud mama moment, because, she ended up being so trained to think about her safety that I had the reaction and immediately thought, you're going into Ann Arbor, you're going to a parking structure, you're going to go to your car late at night, you've got to be safe. Mm-hmm. And for parents, please, please talk to your kids from a point of being afraid versus so angry. Kids can hear better that when you say to them, your choice is scaring the crap out of me. I'm really afraid, and this is why I'm afraid. When you make these choices, you can get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
You can get hurt. And I have shared on this show, you know, my son went through a journey with technology. And it was a tough one. And I'd been setting limits and setting limits and setting limits. And he got himself into a situation where he didn't comply with my limits and went public. And a real crazy person was communicating with my son. And I remember I literally sobbed and said, this is exactly what that limit was about. I don't want you hurt. I am terrified. And now I'm really going to teach you what they look like. You said this, this person said that. That's a predator. And I said, you're going to get schooled at a young age here because you aren't listening. Come from the place, the heart place of being afraid for the person. And I do that often with clients. I say, you scared the crap out of me. Like, oh my God. And if I know they come from an abusive history where they have been dominated, I will always say, I hope you can hear me correctly. This is not domination of you. This is wanting to protect you. And a key when you're dealing with somebody and doing tough love, do your homework. Like, understand that you want to be able to say, if you make this decision, then what will happen? Do you know what will happen to you? Do you realize you have a pattern of making this decision and you end up in the same spot? Pay enough attention to be able to find the patterns that the person does and to talk about it with the person, but not from a place of rage, because anybody who hears rage coming at them gets defensive. From a true place of, I am terrified. Sometimes I've even said with my kids, even with a client, like, I know I sound intense right now. My heart is pounding. I'm so scared for you. I've seen people die in practice. I've seen people go to prison in practice. My reaction is real. And I will say, oh my God, my heart's pounding right now. I am so scared for you. I am to stand next to you. You are ultimately going to make the decision. But I think you're circling a drain right now. You're back to making the same risky decisions. And I watch you fall over and over again. And then I also set a limit and usually in practice say, I'm going to watch you fall so many times. And then I'm going to shut the door, because watching a person who you care about hurt themselves over and over again is treacherous to the person who loves you. It's not okay. It's a tough one. I think I'm going to share Garrett sitting down with me after eating the way I did for Christmas. My son, God bless him, he's so much older now and doing great. And he's, you know, into fitness and all that now. And he came to me. It was either, I can't remember, Matthew, if it was before Christmas or after. I think it was after. He said, I got to talk to you. I said, okay. And we were sitting at the kitchen table. He goes, now, Mom, I really care about you. And I love you, and I don't like the way you're eating. And I, at first I was like, oh. And he said, you know, you've taught me that, you know, it's one thing to have dessert or a bad meal, but then it's important to get yourself back on the next meal. That just happens. And that if you're really going to control weight loss and healthy weight, when you have a food problem, it's important to do the adjustment in the next meal. And you're not doing that. You're in a free for all. I had a proud mama moment first. I'll admit, my friend was like, listen to my kid. Like, oh my God. And I had a humbling moment, like, oh shit, you right. And I said to him, wow, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. I have to get back and start taking better care of myself. With all the stress, I'm now taking it out on myself. And I was so proud of him, and I was able to receive his tough love. He's like, that's enough. He said, you scare me. And I thought, oh my, I am hearing me back to me, which is really freaky. Very, very freaky. But God bless him for loving me enough to kick me in the pants. And I think that's the other important thing for people who receive tough love, that you have to be able to self-evaluate and ask yourself, like, wait a minute, am I doing risky behavior right now? Am I not thinking? Am I not taking care of myself? If the answer is yes, and you can ask them, like, are you caring for me right now, or are you trying to dominate me? And then you've got to listen to their response. Mm-hmm. And for people giving the tough love, if you're screaming at them because you're so scared, then say, I'm sorry, I'm screaming, I'm terrified.
And that's the difference between domination and control. Just for the listeners, because to understand, absolutely, if someone's to get, if you're yelling and screaming, that's human emotion. Yeah. We get worked up sometimes. But when you can say, you know, like you said, interrupt yourself and say, oh, I'm sorry. I'm feeling a lot. I'm surprised I'm feeling such intense emotions myself. That's the difference between someone controlling and dominating you. So for those especially who've been hurt in, you know, abusive relationships, that's going to be the difference between an unhealthy response and a healthy response. Yeah. Someone being able to recognize and do their emotional kind of reflective content and be able to say, you know what, I care about you, and then focus and kind of redirect themselves back to the emotion.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that was quite a journey even for myself, was, you know, being the Italian, you know, we always say we're such passionate people. We are very comfortable with anger. We don't, you know, we go there first. We get intense. And, you know, my husband is the polar opposite. And I would get so intense. And I learned how to say, look at, I can feel my intensity just vibrating into the room right now. And I need to take a breath. I'm very concerned. I'm scared you're not hearing me. I'm scared you're not hearing my point. I'm afraid that you think my intention is not a good intention. Mm-hmm. Learn that language. It is not about perfect. It is about mastering the way you communicate and express yourself. And especially within mistakes, especially when you're feeling intense emotions. Intense emotions are healthy. They're letting you know it's important and pay attention. When you're dealing with kids, especially, you have to watch intensity, especially with highly sensitive children, extremely bright children, children who are so affected by loud noises. You know, I have a child like that who cannot, if I scream, oh, they're paralyzed. And I had to learn to go, look, talk very calmly to this child and say, you know, I'm scared about your choices. I don't want you hurt. I just don't want you hurt. And it's okay to let your kids see that you genuinely are scared. Watch the whole camouflaging that you're completely in control and looking almost like you know everything. People connect better when you're human. Mm-hmm. You don't want the person feeling judged, lectured. You want them to feel that you're connecting with them, not dominating, connecting. And as a parent, I know when they're doing risky behavior, you want to get in there and take control because you're frightened. And if that's happening to you, you have to say that to them. And I'm talking a little bit more about a little bit older kids. I'm not talking about the 2-year-olds who's about to run across the street into traffic. Of course, you grab them and you say, no, no. And you teach them, you stay next to mommy. You don't run into traffic. Mm-hmm. That's a form of tough love. That's a form of tough love. Even looking some things up for the show tonight, I was so amazed at how many articles I was looking at that they were afraid to talk about tough love, as if it was something that you have to be very careful to do. And I get some of it. You want to watch coming from a place of rage and dominance. You know, you got to clarify that. It is essential and important as anything else to communicating positive feedback, good love, tough love is equal in its importance. Saying no is important. No, you can't do that with kids. No, no. Oh my gosh, no. Especially with kids. Parents right now, I think, struggle. They're so overwhelmed where they're just always wanting their kids happy, some parents. And they don't want them in distress. And I have to say to them, you have to understand that distress is important. Life is hard. You have to get them handling stress when they get out into the world. Stop overprotecting them. You got to do the tough love. When you see them, you know, sitting on the kitchen table, I'm laughing because if a certain person hears this, they're going to laugh. You know, or kids in my house, Jesus, you don't get up on my table with your feet. I freaking lose a gasket. Honey, what the hell are you doing? We eat there. Get down. Love you bunches, honey, but you don't get your feet on my table. You don't climb on the furniture. It's not okay to do that. Socialization. It's called socialization of your child. You don't hit another kid. That's not okay. A kid one time was at McDonald's and he hit my son. My son was 2. And I said to the little boy, sweetheart, you don't do that. That's not okay, to the kid that hit my son. I said, that hurts. And I had the parent come, are you scolding my child? I said, yes, I am. I'm doing it in a loving way. It's not okay to hit. I'm not screaming at the child. I'm not grabbing the child. I got down on my knees and I said, honey, you don't do that, sweetheart. You wouldn't want somebody to do that to you. We have to parent. We have to stop always wanting them to just have positivity, because that ain't reality. So tough love is love. It's love. It's love. It's love. It's so important to get that, gosh, I've been saying it a lot lately. You know, I've been saying it a lot in sessions lately. I don't know about you, Matthew, but I have really had to say, you know, wow, I'm watching you. People, you know, with this pandemic and all of the stress, myself included, people, I am not, you know, acting above anybody here. You know, we can make decisions that are not good for us. And whether it's eating issues or whatever it is, shopping or whatever, it's important to do the tough love.
It's understanding too, I think the consequences are like an adjacent, connected form of that tough love. And I think that's something, you know, for me, if anyone could read my inner thoughts, especially when I worked when I was working in the jails or prisons, the one thing that I would try to start, and especially as a major component of, you know, chemical dependency treatment and psychotherapy, is consequences. And that's a form of that tough love. It's adjacent and it's in tandem. So when you're performing, and so learning to love, you get to learn to love the consequence, because when you get to master it, doesn't mean you're perfect at it. When you get to master it, the mastering part is about practicing it and continuing to practice it and keep practicing it, to where you get to that point where you actually do the things that doesn't require so much tough love, but still requires love and compassion and the things that we're talking about, but you reap the rewards of those positive consequences. And so when I would talk to clients, I mean, especially whether it's residential or in the prisons, explaining that, you wouldn't, why are you doing this? Why are you saying this? Why are you having me? And I would, especially running groups and running the residential substance abuse treatment program, why are you having me write this? Because that's part of that reflection. That's part of you stopping and sitting down. And you may never have had someone who has, whether you consider it force or not, but again, there's that, it's not force, it's love, not controlling you. This is sometimes a light suggestion. Sometimes it is a requirement, depending on what level of, extreme kind of circumstances on the continuum. But I would say, you're going to feel, what I can guarantee is you're going to feel a whole heck of a lot better after you get done with doing what I've recommended. And again, like you said, full disclosure, I still F up. I still need tough love, but I'm practicing to receive it so that I can avoid more harsher consequences. And that's when you start to recognize that you get to be more in control. And especially for people who have suffered abuse, and especially for people who have, experienced PTSD, learning that you can gain that control and procure your control, meaning you get to control the amount of control in your life and where it's coming from when you continue to practice so much that it comes second nature to you. That's part of that healing process. And that's part of still a form of tough love, but it's not going to be as intense because you are controlling the sale. You're controlling, right? Whereas, and you've said this off, you and I both have said this where it's like, the work that we do is really being that guiding light. We're going to be beside you. We're going to kind of guide you, but you pick up that pace when you're able to kind of feel the amount of, kind of reprieve from not engaging in those self-destructive, thoughts and thinking and behaviors. And that's really, when we're talking, what tough love is really geared at is to really slow us down. Like you were saying at the top of the beginning here is like, especially with everything with the global pandemic, the last, just the historical kind of political climate that has kind of, inundated us with, and the stress and the frustration, we all need tough love with that. Sometimes unplugging and saying to ourselves, sometimes not knowing something doesn't mean it's the end of the world for us. It means that we have to take care of ourselves. And so tough love can come in so many versions and so in such a variety of ways. And it becomes, you turn it into something fun, right? I mean, I liken it just to like when you and I've talked about like Christmas and like, just winter and, turning it into something fun, so that if you've had a negative experience, create something fun. So if you've had a negative experience where someone tried to control and dominate you, that's not appropriate. That's healthy of you to recognize when someone tried to control and dominate you. That's not a therapeutic and a healthy level of tough love.
Yep. Yep. And I think you hit some really good points here. It's coming from a place of protecting the person, mm-hmm. and it's coming from the place of caring about their well-being. And I think if you go further down on the continuum with tough love, remember within your struggle, there are treasures. Within their struggle, there are treasures. You want to support someone and encourage someone to master something, to get through something in a healthy way so that they can feel their success. Mm-hmm. They can, Matthew and I, when we watch people get it and we watch people, get the job and gain independence and gain recovery, it is so exciting for us. It is joy to us to watch people be successful. This is why I do it. And it's important for the person who's doing tough love and guidance to remember to then compliment and praise the person who has churned directions, been brave enough to say, okay, I'm going to listen to you. I don't trust. I'm scared. You know, you could be full of crap, but I'm going to listen. I'm going to do it. To just say, wow, that in itself is amazing. And I'm proud of you for that.
Mm-hmm.
It's so important to compliment and praise when people do the right thing. Reward the kid. You know, my son said to me about my eating. I said, I'm so free. I got a proud mama moment right here. I'm so proud and impressed with you. You know, my son who's, you know, struggled with weight just dropped 45 pounds. I said, I'm so freaking proud of you. You have no proud mama right here as you're saying this to me. And I felt that. And so to make sure that when they do make the right decision, when they do make the change, that you're also complimenting the person and being there in the place of success and growth, because that person needs it. You trust it. You know, I always say that to clients. Wow, you did. I'm so impressed with you. You did the hard part of adulting. And that is when you're uncomfortable and you're stressed out and your brain wants to go one way and you have the ability to say, oh, my therapist is saying this. I don't want to do it, but I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. From the small thing, like journaling. You know, I get clients who are like, oh, I finally journaled. Now I think I know why you want me to do it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is huge. I always say, I'm going to fall off my chair. Good job. Because you not only did the recommendation, but you dealt with your brain that keeps wanting you to avoid. And you said, I'm not going to avoid and I'm going to do it even though I think she's full of shit. Great. That's growth and change. That's a part of adulting. That's a part of responsibility. And that's the part that you want to look for. The second thing is it's a process. It's a process. It's a process. Don't expect the person to get everything all at once.
Mm-hmm.
When you're set, you know, when I think about this one person I had years ago, and it was one of the people I said, I don't want to see you anymore. You're going to die and you scare the crap out of me. I got a call. I think it was a good year. And I said, sober? Yep. Finish your program? Yep. I am so freaking proud of you. Was the next, oh my God. I am so proud of you. How to deal with your hard issues. Fall in love with yourself. Fall in love with your stuff. This is why on the show I always say, don't let your crap control you. Take control of your crap. And the key to doing that is, you got to be really good to yourself when you're in your crap. Mm-hmm. Don't be mean.
And setting realistic expectations.
Oh.
That's something like that you were, as you were saying that, I think, you know, and I just recently, I remember, especially in the past, like since the new year, just kind of the milestone of that. And also coming up on a year of, you know, kind of everyone enduring this global pandemic. And also saying to people too, and saying to ourselves too, and this is for listeners, and you know, you and I talk about this a lot, Mary Grace, where it's like, we're in the patient seat as well. And that is what helps when the student becomes the teacher and the teacher becomes the student. And it's like, you know, so being able to understand, you know, where stress understands stress and frustration understands frustration. So that as a therapist, you know, we get out of our own way so that we're able to provide them with that relief, hopefully, and that they're able to provide themselves with that relief. And really, I mean, I've said this countless times in the last few weeks is that, you know, what expectations are you placing on yourself? You know, I'm hearing the, you know, maybe the self-critical comments. I'm hearing the, you know, self-denigration. I'm hearing the, you know, maybe wanting to give up, or I'm noticing that maybe some of the things that we've talked about you know, you're forgetting or you haven't been implementing or haven't been working on. Let's talk about that. Like, a lot of times when we pull back, we set our sights a little too high, and it's not that we can't get there, but it's too quick because we have to be patient with ourselves. And like you said, process, process, process. And I always say too, progress over perfection. So if you're making the progress, recently we're talking and it's like, you know, when you take 5 steps forward, but you trip and stumble and you fall once, that might feel like 1 step back, but you still made 4 steps forward. Mm-hmm. So don't discredit. That's also part of the process of tough love too. And letting listener, you know, for everyone listening, a process and the unfolding of this process of tough love is not to discredit yourself, not to discredit, as you were saying, the progress that you're making and giving yourself the accolades that you deserve, so that it doesn't always have to come from a therapist or your partner or your parents or your children. You start to then tell yourself those accolades. You start to tell yourself that, giving yourself the credit where credit is due. And I tell people that. I'm like, I'm a therapist who gives credit where credit is due. And I'm, you know, and I have to tell you, you know, I would love later on to see you give yourself this credit too. And, you know, but let's explore why maybe this is uncomfortable. Again, part of that process. So it's still, for listeners, it's like, that's still a form of that tough love, but you're able to ease into it as you said too, being courageous enough to really surrender to, and being patient to being vulnerable enough to receive the tough love, to receive the love as a term a form of affection, a form of care, a form of concern, to prevent harm to ourselves, harm to themselves. And so as you're driving, or if you're sitting there listening and, you know, you're, you know, doing an adult coloring book, you're talking to your friends, you know, think, you know, express love to yourself and understand that the toughness comes, it over time starts to loosen up because you've been patient and you've said to yourself, as you just pointed out, Mary Grace, is that you've made that choice to say, you know what, my therapist has been telling me that I should be journaling for about 6 months now, and I think I'm going to do it. And you've made that tough choice because guess what? Talking about your crap with yourself is tough. So then you start to recognize you get to be in the driver's seat and you get to recognize, holy crap, this is some tough stuff, but it's not going to be as tough the more I keep practicing and the more I keep on being patient with myself.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's a good point that I hope everybody hears too, is, you know, for those people that are single and living alone and, you know, say, geez, I wish I had somebody who would do that with me. You can do it with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Always say that. Good parent yourself. Reach out. If you're doing behaviors that are risky, then do your homework and get involved in a group and call a therapist, gain support. Don't isolate. Start to really set those limits with yourself. If you listen to our podcast, that can guide you too. We talk about a lot of different issues.
Mm-hmm.
Parent yourself, set limits with yourself, set goals for yourself, and let people in, because isolation, we say this all the time, isolation is the root of mental illness. Don't isolate. And real quick, because I know we're getting close to needing to be done, a quick tidbit. For parents of the little ones, the 2-year-olds and the 3-year-olds who deal with the temper tantrums, who deal with the young ones, you know, I talk about my daughter back when she was little, she's 21 now, but the Kardashians came on as a little girl. I said, you're not allowed to watch it. You know, you can feel like there's just so much to try to manage with little kids. But the no's are important. Set up the rules in your household. I didn't allow certain TV. And I had a talk with my daughter and I had a talk with my son. My son couldn't watch SpongeBob until he was like 7 because I kept hearing him say, shut up, and all of this different language. And I'm like, no, he's got to be old enough that I can sit down with him and say, you know, we don't do that. So with the little ones, with the temper tantrums, you know, you see this in the restaurants when we could go to restaurants, but where the kid is having a temper tantrum and they're just trying to feed the kid. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, you say no, you leave, you have the chat. Mm-hmm. No, it's not okay to act like that. I bet you're hungry. Let's deal with what's going on. Take control of the situation. Not in a violent way.
Yeah.
Deal with it, though. Deal with it, though. I mean, I've seen kids hitting their parents. No. No. Why? Because you've got to socialize the child. If you're feeling lost with that, there's great parenting books you can get on Amazon that can help you about structuring the littles, setting the framework around them, because the temper tantrums usually happen when they get overwhelmed. When they get overwhelmed, when they're hungry, when they're too tired, when they're doing too much, it's a communication to you that something's wrong. And so you've got to then make the world smaller for the child. You've got to do the tough love so that they can learn to self-soothe. They can learn how to take care of themselves. They can learn how to get to know themselves. When my son had temper tantrums, it was like, oh, time to stop. Someone might be tired. You could be, are you hungry? Let's get you some food. Then there was times I'd do the bear hug. He'd eaten. He wasn't tired. He was just going to push his will. And I'd have to go, nope, we don't hit. Uh-uh. My son used to be a biter. Nope, not going to bite. It's important. I love him enough to socialize him. So it is love. It is love. Love, 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 love. And if you remember nothing else, don't do it from a place of domination, aggression, and wanting to win. Mm-hmm. It really needs to come from a place of, I don't want this person getting hurt. And talk about being afraid and that you love them enough to tell them this.
It reduces the frustration of adjustment. It reduces... You'll see a reduction in the things that feel problematic to you. So when I have patients say, but I can't do that. And I say, well, in real time, and I'm going to keep addressing this. And it might feel like I'm beating a dead horse, or, you know, we're kind of a broken record, but this is something that, you know, a lot of times it's like, well, I just want to change my behavior. Well, that's part of the tough love, is addressing a lot of the thinking and the feelings, right? The thoughts and feelings, right? You get triggered and there's thoughts and feelings before you get to change you can change the behavior. But if you don't understand, then that's where sometimes even the tough love ends up getting worse or feels worse, as opposed to, you know, learning to adjust in the kind of slow increments, which then can become quicker, and you learn to become much quicker at the adjustment, so that it doesn't feel stressful and you start to resolve those things that were felt unruly and, you know, distressful.
Yes. You have power. Yeah.
Yeah.
To empower yourself or something else to do well. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, if you are a parent who's dealing with addiction or somebody who is dealing with an addiction issue, especially, gain support. You know, I'll close on that note. There are Parent Anonymous groups. There are Al-Anon groups. So many groups that can support you to help you to be able to learn, you know, limit setting and how to do it and when to do it. But I really hope this podcast helps. You know, I hope you'll tune in again. We're on Podcast Detroit, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, YouTube, Facebook. Just look up Psych by MG. And please, 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 as my phone goes off, please hit like and subscribe and leave us a message, because we care. And until next time, get control of your crap. Don't let your crap control you.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.